This is Ozarks at Large for Tuesday, May 20th, 2014. I'm Kyle Callums.
And I'm Antoinette Grajeda. Washington Regional Hospice presents the 23rd Annual Summer Garden Party June 14th at 6 p.m. at the Fayetteville home of Kim and Bob Whitfield. This West Meets South fundraiser will include live music from Back Road Anthem, food, beverages, auctions, and more. 444-9888 for tickets or wregional.com/hospicegardenparty for more information.
Ahead on this edition of Ozarks, it's primary election day in Arkansas, and Roby Brock talks to three Republicans seeking their party's nomination for attorney general.
And the city of Fayetteville is looking toward the future as baby boomers continue to age. A new project wants the city to become an age-friendly place.
First, Arkansas House Speaker Davy Carter wants to bring lawmakers together to consider changes that would fix problems with the state's school insurance plans. In an interview with Talk Business and Politics, Carter said the action is needed because programs continue bleeding money.
I'm going to ask the governor to have a special session. I hope he takes us up on that. I know he will. Because it's the state's going to have to get our arms around and make these changes before August, before all these plans start going into effect.
Matt DeCampbell, a spokesman for Governor Mike Beebe, says there is a willingness to consider the proposal, but more details are needed.
The governor needs to see some of the specific proposals for that to make sure he supports those. And then, like with any potential special session, he needs to see that there's enough consensus in the legislature to ensure that this would be a three-day in-and-out special session and would be of minimal cost to the taxpayers.
Speaker Carter says the session would need to take place before August to beat a deadline for enrollment in new insurance plans. One topic Carter says he does not want to address in the session are proposals to impeach the judge who recently issued a ruling that opened the door for gay marriages in Arkansas.
With primary elections taking place across Arkansas today, the State Board of Election Commissioners voted yesterday to send an election monitor to Jefferson County after receiving multiple reports of irregularities. Election Commissioner Stu Soffer says he's asking for prosecutors and the state police to investigate a number of alleged violations. He says Jefferson County Clerk Patricia Royal Johnson has repeatedly ignored election laws, including absentee ballot registering procedures.
The county clerk neglected to use a register for the first 30 days the ballots were available. She called up here to complain about me, quote unquote, bugging her clerks about the register last week and had an aw shucks moment when Mr. Humphreys shared with her the fact that, yes, you're supposed to have a register. So now in Jefferson County, we've got an unknown number of absentee ballots handled by agents and bearers that there's no record of.
The Board of Election Commissioners approved one election monitor to oversee absentee ballots, but declined to provide monitors in four Jefferson County precincts, asking for assistance because of a failure by local officials to follow protocol and submit proper paperwork. County Clerk Patricia Royal Johnson refused to comment on the allegations.
Crawford County voters today are being asked to vote on a sales tax increase to support construction of a new jail. John Hall, Crawford County judge, says the proposed jail and 0.75-cent sales tax increase are all about increasing public safety in the county.
We've got to the point where we can't keep anything but felons, and now we have to pick and choose which felons stays, which felons go, because we only can have so many people in our jail, and we have, and even the state now has even made it less than what we had before. So you have to pick and choose. The sheriff decides which one he keeps and which one goes. So it's time we have to do something. We've been written up by the state for the last year or so, and we do not meet specifications. So it's a real serious problem, and we're trying to solve this problem by building this facility.
Although county voters have repeatedly rejected similar proposed tax increases, Hall says this time a greater amount of information about the proposal has been available to the public.
We've tried to answer everything that everybody said was wrong with the last issues that they've tried to pass. It was not clear, had no clarity on what they were going to build or where they were going to put it or what it's going to cost. They just said, you know, we didn't want a jail. We'll tell you what we're going to do with it later. But we have told them exactly where it's going to go. We've got a diagram of exactly what we're going to build. And we've told them exactly what it's going to cost. The construction company, the architect that we picked, has never run over the budget, and they have never been late. And so they built 25 or 30 jails across this country over the last 17 years.
Hall says while he would like the public to vote for the issue, He urges county voters to actually cast their ballots and express their feelings about the proposal with their vote.
More than 98,000 Arkansans voted early in this year's primary elections, for which polls are open until 7:30 tonight. To find out your polling place, visit the Arkansas Secretary of State's website at voterview.org.
A Fayetteville-based company is now closer to bringing early-stage breast cancer detection to market. Ascendant DX, a portfolio company of Vic Technology Venture Development, announced it has completed a round of funding that netted $2 million for the company, which will help it develop its patent-pending biomarker panel that distinguishes differences in proteins present in human tears in order to detect breast cancer. According to the company, the biomarker panel, called Melody DX, will be able to distinguish between malignant breast masses from benign tissue and could offer an alternative to repeated biopsies.
The former public relations manager for Sam's Clubs has been tapped to lead communications for the University of Arkansas System Division of Agriculture. Mark Scott, a U of A alumni, will become the division's chief communications officer as part of the division's communications restructuring. Scott formerly worked in public relations for Northwest Arkansas Community College and in media relations for Hendricks College. Mary Hightower, who has served as assistant director of communications for the U of A Cooperative Extension Service, will become the Director of Communication Services and will oversee tactical aspects of communications units for the Extension Service and the Arkansas Agricultural Experiment Station.
The Northwest Arkansas Naturals closed out two games on the road last night with a 4-3 loss against the Tulsa Drillers. The Nats won 1-4 in that home-and-home series against Tulsa. Team now 16-27 on the season. Play continues tomorrow evening back in Springdale when the Naturals will host a 3-game series against the San Antonio Missions.
Mostly clear tonight with lows around 63 degrees. Mostly sunny tomorrow with highs around 86. And for tomorrow night, expect partly cloudy skies with lows around 62.
This is Ozarks at Large. The past several days have included a legal volleyball match over the rights of same-sex couples to marry in Arkansas and have the same legal standing as different-sex marriages. Friday afternoon, the Arkansas Supreme Court issued a stay of Judge Piazza's ruling that struck down a ban on same-sex marriages. Roby Brock from our content partner Talk Business and Politics asked the three candidates for the GOP nomination for Attorney General in Arkansas to discuss their position on the matter. His discussion with Patricia Nelson, David Sterling, and Leslie Rutledge took place on the eve of the state primary election day.
I know where you all stand personally on the subject of same-sex marriage. You're all opposed to it, but I want to know where you guys stand professionally and how you would conduct yourself in the Attorney General's office in this respect. Patricia, I'm going to come to you first on this. If the Supreme Court upholds the Piazza decision on a same-sex marriage ruling, what would you do as Attorney General to continue on this track?
Well, Roby, as Attorney General, if this ruling is upheld, the Attorney General must enforce the laws. And so I am confident and very hopeful that this decision will not be upheld for a variety of reasons.
All right, David, what about you? How would you handle it?
Well, again, I think that the rule of law is what we're going to follow here in Arkansas, and if the Supreme Court upholds it, I will follow Arkansas law as well. But what's really important about this is that the ruling itself, that basically an amendment to the Arkansas Constitution that was, by very definition, grafted into the Constitution when it passed by a 75% majority in 2004 is somehow unconstitutional. What Judge Piazza said is that the Constitution is unconstitutional, and
predicated that on the U.S. Constitution and the 14th Amendment.
So. Well, he had two elements of that ruling. He ruled that it was unconstitutional under the U.S. Constitution and also under the Arkansas Constitution. Whether or not it's unconstitutional under the U.S. Constitution will ultimately make its way to the U.S. Supreme Court.
How would you handle it, Leslie?
Sir, if the state Supreme Court does uphold Judge Piazza's ruling, which I don't think that the Supreme Court will do. I worked for the Arkansas Court of Appeals for a couple of years, then, the Supreme Court, the Court of Appeals, they take a long time often to address these, and I'm certainly glad that the court put a stay on the marriages. But, you know, if they do, then as Attorney General, it will be my job to uphold the law. But I think that we should continue, you know, pushing to ensure that the intent of the voters with their desire to have marriage between a man and a woman is upheld.
Well, correct me if I'm wrong, but can't the Attorney General appeal to the U.S. Supreme Court if they're not satisfied with the state Supreme Court decision? Would any of you pursue this at the U.S. Supreme Court?
Well, actually, to trigger that type of action, it's possible. But today we've got at least 8 states who have ruled on this issue. And what's going to eventually happen is that issue is going to go to the U.S. Supreme Court, because you've got all of this, these different rulings happening at the state level, and this could be the case that is taken up, but there has to be certiorari before you can actually take a case up to the Supreme Court. So it's not going to be up to the Arkansas Attorney General. It will be up to the U.S. Supreme Court whether or not there is the appropriate case opportunity to have this before them.
You take it to the Supreme Court, U.S. Supreme Court?
Absolutely, but one thing that's really important to note is that Judge Piazza ruled on 2 elements of that case. He ruled that it was unconstitutional under the Arkansas Constitution and under the U.S. Constitution. To the extent that the appeal of his ruling regarding the Arkansas Constitution, the Arkansas Supreme Court is going to be the ultimate authority on that. So that'll just stop there, whatever they decide. If they decide that it is that the amendment is constitutional under Arkansas Constitution and keep the ban in place, then the element of his opinion that said that it's unconstitutional under the U.S. Constitution, there will be a direct line of appeal to the U.S. Supreme Court, and absolutely, I'll pursue that.
Leslie?
Certainly, and as you know, David mentioned, and Patricia, I think that we all agree on this, which is, you know, nice to find when you're vying for office against one another, that one of the 3 of us will be, you know, defending this Arkansas Constitution and statutes. And so, yes, I would be cheerfully to argue before the Supreme Court after, you know, the Supreme Court granted cert based on the 14th Amendment. I do think there's a legitimate state interest in, you know, upholding marriage between a man and a woman, and that would be something that I would be arguing as Attorney General.
Let's shift to another topic that has come up as a result of this same-sex marriage ruling, and that is the state legislature, who is going to lean on the Attorney General for legal advice. There's been discussion about a potential impeachment of Judge Piazza on this, and I guess if the state Supreme Court does it too, I wouldn't be surprised to see that folded in there. Leslie, what advice would you give to the state legislature? Does Judge Piazza's ruling rise to the level of an impeachable offense? Is it a high crime and misdemeanor?
Well, there was certainly some language in the judge's order that I found very surprising. It almost seemed as if the judge, you know, was admitting that, you know, that judges can be super legislators, and that was not his intent. And so he was already acknowledging that that was a possibility. And I would caution the legislature not to overstep, but at the same time, you know, if they feel this is the judge overstepping, then they should, you know, look to impeachment, and I would work with them.
David?
I would say that we have a system of checks and balances in place in our Constitution, and to the extent that the legislature wants to check the judiciary, I think that that's appropriate, just like Judge Piazza checked the legislature in issuing that opinion. So I don't think that it's inappropriate for them to consider that. And again, the part that just kind of gets me is the trial judge's role in all this is not to his job is to follow the law, you know, to interpret the law as it's written. And in this case, he seemed to kind of impose his will despite the legislature's intent. I think that the appropriate role for him would have been to find it to be constitutional and leave it to the Supreme Court to figure out whether or not it was unconstitutional or not. And I just think that he kind of stepped out there on a limb, and I think that that's why we have a system of checks and balances that we do. And as Attorney General, I will work with the legislature if they ask me for my advice and everything on how to proceed under the existing Constitution, or if the Constitution needs to be amended in order to provide for that, I'll give them the counsel that they ask for.
Patricia, is this an impeachable offense in your eyes?
Well, I really do believe that the spirit of impeachment is correct because this decision overturned the will of the people, and we decided overwhelmingly, and as David said, 75% of us under Amendment 83 want marriage defined in Arkansas as between a man and a woman. But the Supreme Court has already ruled on a case, and it's really an issue of justiciability, not impeachment, because we have a ruling in Arkansas that says that a judge can hear controversies dealing with separate branches of government. And so this gives Judge Piazza the authority to state that an amendment in Arkansas is unconstitutional. So I don't think the impeachment process would go anywhere, but I certainly agree with the fact that the overruling an act passed by Arkansas citizens overwhelmingly is certainly something that I highly disagree with.
Roby Brock from our content partner Talk Business and Politics talked to three candidates for the Republican Party nomination for Attorney General just before today's primary election. We heard from Leslie Rutledge, David Sterling, and Patricia Nation. Support for Talk Business and Politics on Ozarks at Large is provided by AT&T, encouraging drivers to take the pledge to never text and drive. No text is worth the risk. More information at itcanwait.com. And Bank of the Ozarks, committed to helping business owners succeed by combining the tools and services businesses need with accessible experience and knowledge. More information at bankozarks.com.
And the Electric Cooperatives of Arkansas. Diversity is the key to reliability and affordability, from the state's largest industrial user to a home at the end of a long country road. The Electric Cooperatives of Arkansas serve members with a stable supply of electricity backed up with fuel diversity. Coal, oil, natural gas, hydropower, and renewables. More at AECC.com. And the Arkansas State Chamber of Commerce and Associated Industries of Arkansas. Learn more at ArkansasStateChamber.com.
In about 10 minutes on Ozark, solar power at the Veterans Administration Hospital in Fayetteville.
We're trying to save energy on campus, and then also we're trying to move some of our energy over to renewable approach to it.
Reducing energy consumption at the VA. That's ahead on Ozarks at Large.
I'm Jeremy Hobson. Is Panic the new Hunger Games? It's a young adult book about teens taking on death-defying challenges in a town-wide competition. The winner gets a ticket out of poverty.
I started thinking about what would make some people capable of withstanding fear and embracing it even, and what makes other people try to avoid fear at all costs.
That's next time on Here and Now from NPR and WBUR Boston.
Listen this afternoon from 1 to 3 to 91.3 FM.
This is Ozarks at Large. AARP estimates that in just a few years, 2020, one in four Americans will be age 65 or older. The first baby boomers have already crossed that threshold, and the tail end of that large demographic will all be at least 65 by 2027. Several studies conducted on that particular aging group, including those by AARP, suggest these adults will prefer to remain in their own homes and continue to have an active, independent, and interactive lifestyle. The World Health Organization wants communities to consider, as soon as possible, what an active aging population will mean. The WHO has created a global initiative to encourage age-friendly cities. This past weekend, Fayetteville launched its own age-friendly community initiative. Dr. Gene Henry, an associate professor of community health promotion at the University of Arkansas, is helping the project begin. She says considering what aging means is an important issue, not just domestically, but globally.
And in this country in particular, we've got the baby boomer generation. In other countries, simply because people are getting improved medical care, improved services, economic stability in many countries. So sometimes the reason is different, but throughout the world, our population is aging.
Alicia Ferguson, an associate professor in the School of Social Work at the University of Arkansas, says it's not just the numbers of people reaching their mid-60s that deserves attention, but the shift in how people decide to spend their time after 60 or 65 or 70.
We also expect people to be more active, but also struggle with more chronic disease than generations past. So it's really important for us to have a lot of structures in place to help people continue to be active and involved in the community.
So with a record percentage of the population expected to soon be 65 or older, and a different expectation from that demographic, what does that mean for a community? The organizers of Age Friendly Fayetteville want to find out. The first phase of their project launched Saturday with a public proclamation from Mayor Lionel Jordan and the first attempts at public outreach. Gene Harris says the first steps are community engagement, to find out what people planning to stay in Fayetteville as they age want in what would be an age-friendly city. There will be focus groups, surveys, and interviews that eventually will be collected for recommendations for the city council.
It's not us deciding what we think an age-friendly city will be, but it's the citizens. It's the, as you noted, the not just older people, though, but people who are younger who may have a slightly different perspective about what they want in a community that will support their healthy, active aging. So, yes, we need comments. We need input from everyone to let us know what that means and how to paint that picture.
The WHO designed the age-friendly template with 8 distinct topics to be addressed. Those components include an examination of public transportation, housing, communication. Alicia Ferguson says some of the requirements for qualifying as an age-friendly city are very basic.
We have to do things like count park benches and ask people if there's
spaces.
Enough. Yes, outdoor spaces. We have to count park benches, make sure that people think there's enough park benches in the right places so that as we age and suffer from things like arthritis, we're still able to use the parks. So things as simple as that, things as simple as looking at the traffic lights to make sure they cycle for an older population's driving habits, also the crosswalks here, that sort of thing.
As the boomers grow older, there could be a shift in how society views aging. It doesn't take much of a search on television to see jokes about aging and stereotypes of older citizens played for laughs. One of the 8 elements to be examined is respect and social inclusion. Gene Harris, one of the organizers of the local project, says the Fayetteville effort is striving for multi-generational involvement.
It's not at 55 you retire and you go home and you sit down and you watch sitcoms, but You maintain active, and we have master swimming, you have masters running, you have people in their older, later years still being extremely active. And I think that changes then. There's no way you can't respect someone who could be out on the road side by side with a 20-year-old. And just that whole concept of the range of activities in which this generation is going to want to continue to participate.
Alicia Ferguson says the concept of age silos is evaporating. Age silos are where older residents participating in activities solely for their age group gather at one place or at venues or centers specifically designed for seniors. She says there are cities like Portland, Oregon, and Bowling Green, Kentucky, that have already or are currently addressing a more interactive, multi-generational landscape. And Gene Harris says college towns like Fayetteville may have a built-in advantage since a college campus, by design, creates an environment inhabited by different generations.
We have a number of faculty who are involved in studying aspects of aging, both through research and through teaching and educational opportunities. I think the young people, as all of us when we were young, we know we're going to get old someday, but it's going to be different for us. And Alicia and I did some previous research that asked people in middle age, does their a perception of aging influence their preparation, and interestingly enough, almost everyone said that, you know, when you get old, it looks like this, it's this bad people being infirm, but that wasn't going to happen to them. So I think at all ages, we consider ourselves invincible, and in that process will be different. So I think, yes, they think about it, but I don't think in terms of a reality for them. It'll always be different for us, it'll always be better, and we'll never have the problems.
Both Gene and Alicia teach courses at the university about aging, and both stress this project is seeking opinions and experiences from people who not just live in Fayetteville, but work and visit the town as well. And they also want to talk to another group of people, people who left Fayetteville as they reached a certain age, that decided to live somewhere else as they grew older.
That could give us some clues to what we could do better. Because one of the things that we need to do in Fayetteville is we need to keep our older adults around. We talk about there's going to be 1 in 4 older adults by the year 2020. We only have 7.9% of people who are over 65 here now. So we really want to grow that because older adults are such a solid foundation economically and socially for a community like Fayetteville.
The just-started community engagement for the Age-Friendly Fayetteville Project has support from the City of Fayetteville, the University of Arkansas, the Area Agency on Aging, and the Fayetteville Chamber of Commerce. There is a website with much more information. It's agefriendlyfayetteville.uark.edu. There is also an Age-Friendly Fayetteville Facebook page. This is Ozarks at Large.
Each month on Ozarks, we seek out a story exemplifying the changes technology is making in our part of the world. For May, Ozarks at Large's Jacqueline Froelich turned to a venerable agency using solar power. The Veterans Healthcare System, based in Fayetteville, has installed a large solar array. As Jacqueline reports, the Alternative Energy Project is part of the VA's new Green Management Program.
At first glance, the large southeast parking lot at Fayetteville's historic VA hospital adjacent to the administration complex appears to have a series of new canopies, but in fact it's a massive new solar array. VA project engineer Lee Warren.
We're trying to save energy on campus, and then also we're trying to move some of our energy over to renewable approach to it.
The VA solar installation is part of a national VA project to reduce energy consumption. Warren stands beneath one of three solar arrays, which also serve as a carport cover over the 170-space parking lot. Each array is held aloft by massive steel horizontal crossbeams bolted to four vertical pedestals, and they all face upward slightly west.
Oh, it's about around about 12 degrees. That was part of the study as far as that goes. It was a design build, and as part of the design, you know, they determined what would be the best angle for this location.
The three arrays are 37 feet wide, but range in length from 116 feet to 309 feet. 1,218 square foot solar modules create 23,500 square feet of solar sink. The panels were installed on the parking lot because it was the least intrusive and most sunny spot on the 50-acre campus, even on this chilly mid-May cloudy morning.
It'll be some generation, yes, right now. Low temperatures really don't hurt us as much. In the winter, it's the angle of the sun that cuts down a little bit on it, but the cool weather, the cells work quite well. They actually prefer the cool weather.
But on sunny days...
This has a maximum generation of 266 kW. Overall, it's going to end up for the whole year of giving us about 4% of our usage on campus.
To power the hospital, clinics, and offices, a remote electrical pad northeast of the solar panels contain the inverter electrical equipment and associated controls. The system went online in February after a year of construction.
Oh, I thought it was a good opportunity for us to kind of be on the leading edge and look at some larger solar projects. In Northwest Arkansas, most of the solar projects are pretty small. There's a few that are medium-sized at the U of A, but this is definitely the largest one in this area.
And the fourth largest solar power project in the state, Warren says.
The power is fed into our local grid, and therefore it just really cuts down on our overall consumption.
The VA solar energy production won't exceed usage, so won't be sold back to SWEPCO via reverse metering, which allows alternative energy producers to sell power back to the grid. Warren says they will measure output over the next year and make any necessary adjustments. The Veterans Administration Green Management Program facilitators will also be monitoring. The Fayetteville VA was pitched the solar array project as part of the Veterans Administration's Green Management Program.
They selected campuses throughout the country. Right. An overall project to cut the energy usage throughout the nation with a goal of decreasing it by 20% by 2020.
Renewable energy projects implemented at VA facilities yield energy cost savings, reduce reliance on fossil fuels, and provide environmental benefits, including reductions in greenhouse gas emissions. Joseph Sable is team member of the U.S. Department of Veterans Affairs Green Management Programs. He's based in the central office in Washington, D.C.
So the way a site is selected for a solar installation is based on the a variety of factors, including the interest of the facility. All of the proposals are evaluated in a feasibility study to make sure it's a useful investment both from a technical perspective and from a fiscal perspective so that we get the best value for the taxpayers' dollars.
The cost of the Fayetteville VA solar system was around $1.3 million. So where does that money come from?
The VA receives a limited congressional appropriation for energy projects. And then the projects that we would like to do are prioritized based on the feasibility studies that I mentioned. And again, trying to find the best value, save as much money as possible that we can then reinvest in caring for our veterans and their families.
And the Fayetteville VA solar installation is one of dozens across the U.S., Sable says.
We have installed overall about 78 solar projects across the country. They tend to work best where there's both a lot of sun and the cost of electricity is high. The sizes of the projects range from about 100 kilowatts up to 9 megawatts in Los Angeles. West Los Angeles is our biggest facility. Fayetteville is just under 300 megawatts, and it's one of our smaller ones, but it's just as effective. And lately, we've been increasing the number of solar facilities that we've been able to install because the price of solar panels has been dropping quite dramatically in the last few years.
The VA's green program is part of a larger environmental management program to assure environmental accountability is integrated into day-to-day actions as well as long-term planning.
Green management program actually started in 2003. The first energy mandates, federal energy mandates, go back to actually 1978 in the Carter administration. And since that time, since the green management program began in 2003, our mission has been to reduce the Department of Veterans Affairs environmental footprint by reducing energy, reducing greenhouse gases, saving money, conserving water, making a healthier environment for our veterans, their families, employees, and the communities we serve.
And the VA's green management programs cover an array of applications.
Energy conservation, vehicle fleet management, environmental compliance. We have a climate change adaptation program. And we're also responsible for environmental justice issues. But our investment in terms of infrastructure are primarily solar systems and combined heat and power projects.
Now, the U.S. Department of Defense is the single largest consumer of energy in the United States. That's according to Global Green. But it's also going green, starting in 1990 with a congressional appropriation to preserve natural resources while supporting military readiness. The DOD also conducts collaborative environmental research programs, harnessing the latest science and technology to improve environmental performance, reduce costs, and enhance and sustain mission capabilities. And the U.S. Department of Veterans Affairs Green Management Programs, which celebrates Earth Day annually, by the way, conveys awards to deployed projects to recognize and encourage innovation and cost savings. And it also sets benchmarks in its most recent reporting as of January 2013. The program is excelling in meeting reductions in water and energy use and expansion of renewable energy and green construction. The VA, however, is lagging in reduction of its petroleum fleet and greenhouse gas emissions. But then, aren't we all? For Ozarks at Large, I'm Jacqueline Froelich.
To learn more about the U.S. Department of Veterans Affairs Green Management Programs, visit green.va.gov. And Lee Warren, the Fayetteville VA project engineer, invites the public to take a look at their new solar installation located in the southeast parking lot adjacent to Building 4.
And it is time to give stuff away.
What are we giving away?
All right. So yesterday, I just asked people to send an email for two packages each. Each would contain three vouchers to a future Northwest Arkansas game, Northwest Arkansas Naturals game at our best ballpark in Springdale, three tickets to any Malco movie theater in our region, and three tickets to Rocklahoma in Pryor, Oklahoma.
That's this weekend.
It is this weekend. It's Friday, so I hope these folks who are about to have their names mentioned have not made plans. I said yesterday I thought it was the loudest contest we'd have this year, Rocklahoma. But you know what? The people who entered this time were the most polite. Not that anyone's ever rude, but everyone was saying, please, I'd really like it. I'd like to take my girlfriend. I'd like to take my son.
Well, who do we get to help out?
Henry Pierce.
Uh-huh.
Henry, you are one of the winners. And Larry, I don't know exactly how to say your last name. Kosar?
We'll email you.
Yeah, we'll email you.
And make sure the right Larry gets his tickets.
That's right. And we'll be in touch by email very soon and send you all the tickets in the mail. Or if you want to come pick them up, we'll find out. It is Tuesday, May 20th, 2014. This is Ozarks at Large. I'm Kyle Kellens. With me, Becca Martin-Brown, features editor at Northwest Arkansas Newspapers.
Want to talk a little music?
Sure.
You know, it's a topic I'm weak on, so I'm going to be speaking as Kevin Kinder, our music editor.
All right.
There's a group coming to Fort Smith tonight mm-hmm. for an 8:15 show at Neumeyer's Rib Room. Mm-hmm. They're called the Winery Dogs, but they bring together musicians from bands such as Poison, Dream Theater, and Mr. Big.
Okay.
How bizarre is that? Joining the Winery Dogs as an opening act will be Charm City Devils.
Uh-huh.
Then there's a songwriting...
I bet they're from Baltimore. What do you want to think?
You think?
Charm City.
I bet so.
All right.
Brennan Lee and Noel McKay, who are a singer-songwriter duo, will team up for a show at 7 o'clock Wednesday at the Fayetteville Underground. They do folk country, and the Houston Chronicle described the act as being in the hallowed tradition of George and Tammy, Johnny and June, and Conway and Loretta.
Okay, well, there you go.
Admission is $12. And of course, it's time to think about Wakarusa.
Yes. Yes, it is.
It's about 2 weeks away, and a bunch of the options for attending have already sold out.
Yeah, camping,
I think, is gone.
Unless you win the KUAF prize.
Oh, wouldn't that be fun?
It would.
That would be awesome. Tell them about the KUAF prize.
Well, go online, KUAF.com, and register. We're going to give that away soon.
Okay. Four-day passes are still available. You can find out more at Wakarusa.com.
And if you want, I've done this before, you can do a down and back. It's not that, depending on where you are in Northwest Arkansas, but it's not that far from Fort Smith or Fayetteville. Just make sure you've got someone who's able to drive.
Precisely.
All right. Thank you, Becca. Becca Martin-Brown, features editor at Northwest Arkansas Newspapers.
Efforts to increase recycling in the community have been on the rise. The city of Fayetteville recently opened a new drop-off center on North Street, in addition to replacing receptacles at various apartment complexes. Individuals in the community have the chance to take part in a statewide campaign to encourage further participation in recycling. The Arkansas Department of Environmental Quality has launched a contest open to everyone in the state to come up with a slogan. Ozarks at Large's Christina Thomas spoke with Catherine Beninati, a spokesperson with ADEQ, who says the organization is already very active in recycling efforts.
We do a lot. We have an entire branch dedicated to recycling, and our mission is really to help others figure out better ways to recycle. We have a market development branch that businesses can talk to and figure out if they have trouble finding a market or have a specific product that they need to recycle. They can come to us and we'll hook them up with the right person that knows some more information about where they can recycle. We go out and we do waste audits at schools, at various organizations. And what we do with that is we will kind of get a request to do a waste audit, and we'll go out and actually dig through trash. We'll look at what people are throwing away, and then we'll help them figure out how they can increase their recycling opportunities and possibly even salvage some materials. We also help the communities plan e-waste events, and we do a number of presentations around the state on recycling and solid waste management strategies.
Have you seen an increase in recycling of late?
It's kind of hard to pinpoint. The rate does go up and down, but let me explain that a little further. Our most recent annual report showed a 35% annual recycling rate. But let me explain kind of what goes into that. We do an annual report, and cities and counties have to report what they are recycling. Other agencies or other nonprofit organizations and other industries can voluntarily offer that information. So sometimes we have a great amount of voluntary information, and we'll see, that the rate fluctuate. And then sometimes, we'll see an increase or a decrease from those cities and counties. So it's kind of a hard hard number to pinpoint, but right now our best estimate is that we have about a 35% recycling rate. All
and
right. That means that 35% of material that would be going into landfills is being recycled instead.
Yeah, all right. Well, I know that we're looking for a new slogan, but first, can we talk about maybe things that you've used in the past?
We haven't had a slogan in the past. So for this, this is a new idea for us, and we're really hoping that the public likes the idea that they can participate, and we hope that it gets people interested about recycling, and then we hope that as a result of this, we have a way that people can, whether they're in Texarkana, whether they're in El Dorado, whether they're in Eureka Springs, can go to our website, can pull up some material and advertise their own recycling programs and kind of just get the word out that this is a good thing to do and get people excited about it.
And so we're holding, the Arkansas Department is holding a contest. So anybody that lives in Arkansas can come up with a slogan that they think really speaks about Arkansas and recycling and enter that in?
Yes, the contest is open to the public. They will need to submit those slogans to us by June 16th. We do have a few rules. The slogans need to be 5 words or less, and they have to include a form of the word recycle. So recycle, recycled, recycling. And then what we'll do is we'll have a panel of judges review that logo, the submittals. We'll have them pick a winner, and then we'll develop a logo that goes with that slogan and some outreach materials that we can put on our website for anyone to use.
And so it has potential to be seen just about anywhere.
Hopefully. We hope that it really gets out there. Like I said, this is we hope that this gets people excited about recycling.
I know that this contest just launched, but have you received any entries?
I don't think that we've received any entries yet, but we have received some interest. Actually, some of our employees have asked about the contest, and unfortunately they're not. They're not able to enter, but anyone that has, you know, a student or knows someone that really cares about recycling and wants to enter a slogan, we definitely encourage them to.
Okay. I was hoping maybe you could give me some examples of fun ones that have already come in.
No, none yet, but hopefully after your story airs, we'll get a few.
Okay, that'd be nice. And where can people enter?
If you go to the ADEQ webpage, just adeq.state.ar.us, go to the right-hand side, and there's a column called Hot Topics, and just click on the item that says recycling slogan, and the contest entry form and a flyer should come up.
Okay. All right. Well, thank you so much. I don't know that I have anything else that was quick.
Okay, great. Thank you, Christina.
For Ozarks at Large, I'm Christina Thomas.
Every summer, the arts organizations all over Arkansas and Oklahoma create opportunities for children and teenagers in our region to experience the arts. They can participate in plays, make pottery, there's painting, drawing, puppetry, you name it, it can all be discovered by kids. There's also a chance for adults to try something new artistically or to return to an arts endeavor they may have abandoned for some time. The John Brown University Visual Arts Summer Workshop Series for 2014 includes workshops in screen printing, photography, screenwriting, painting, and more. I recently spent some time on the JBU campus with some of the instructors who will be leading the workshops, and I asked them to explain why adults need such experience with art, including overnight stays, as much as younger people do. Steve Schnediger, who is teaching the screenwriting workshop, says he only needs to look at his own life for a valid reason.
I started to play the oboe again after 25 years this last 6 months. And basically, I came back into a place where I was something that I loved and did and was passionate about, put it aside, dropped it, picked it back up. And now I'm actually thinking, hey, I should go take lessons from somebody. I should go talk to an expert. A lot of people have this stuff in their past. They either dabbled in it, maybe studied it, put it aside. And now in each of our areas, we have the opportunity to kind of maybe rekindle some of that lost art in their lives through these workshops.
Bobby Martin will lead workshops in printmaking, including a 3-day session in solar plate etching. One of those days will be spent at his private studio. He describes it as a playhouse near Tahlequah, Oklahoma, discovering how to make prints. Bobby says a workshop series like this allows adults to try something new with minimal investment, as well as have access to materials and instruction not often available.
I think that's attractive to people. I know when I
take workshops and give workshops. One of the things that is nice is to be able to go into a place where I wouldn't necessarily have access to that kind of equipment or that kind of materials or that kind of a medium too. You know, it's like the oil painting, try oil painting. I wouldn't necessarily do that unless I had an opportunity to go to a workshop and be able to do that.
Some of the workshops, like writing or painting, might attract some people with previous experience in the medium. Neil Holland, along with Kyle Agee, will be leading a workshop he's pretty sure will be full of first-timers, wet plate collodion. The process is not new. In fact, it dates back to the earliest days of photography. It was created by a man named Frederick Scott in the mid-18th century, and it's been enjoying a resurgence of interest in this age of the ubiquitous digital image.
It basically takes a bromide collodion solution and uses that as a carrier for pure silver nitrate. So you have a bromide solution, a salt, and a silver nitrate that's light sensitive. And those two things together actually form the image on a wet plate. So a piece of iron, what we actually use is trophy plate, which you could buy from, you know, sports supply, that sort of thing. But the process is you know, quite old and has to be learned. I mean, you know, it's an experiential thing, so it doesn't matter that no one will have any experience.
Arts instructors often say there can be a big difference between workshops designed for children and workshops for adults. Rarely, they say, do the younger students express a fear of trying some new form of art. Adults, however, can bring with them their doubts or memories of their attempts that might not have measured up to their own expectations. John Lasseter, who will be leading workshops in oil painting, says he understands that creating art can be frightening, even intimidating. All the more reason, he says, to pick up the brush or pen or camera.
You know, with a good teacher, someone can learn to forgive themselves and just be okay with their clumsy attempts. And it actually lends itself to really good art, as a matter of fact, when one can let go and be that way. And that would be why kids tend to do so well. So if all you're doing is getting people to get over their fears, I think that's worth the workshop, you know, in and of itself.
Okay, true. The workshops will probably not produce the next Ansel Adams or Coen Brothers or Grandma Moses. But Steve Schnediger, who will be teaching writing at one of the summer workshops, says that's not really the point. In fact, he suggests the process of just creating can be inspiring and liberating.
I like to say that script writing is the best form of therapy you can get without paying for it, because you really do reveal all your inner demons. You're dealing with stuff that you struggle with. You deal with conflicts that are present in your life. And it's funny to see students, again, I just finished a semester of undergrad script writing, but the students get a little bit uncomfortable with the fact that they might be revealing that they're struggling with addiction or something in the midst of this character that's there. You know, they suddenly say, whoa, wait a minute, I'm looking in the mirror. So one of the things I try to do, whether they're young people, old people, whatever, we turn it into a game. Storytelling becomes a game. We do drills, two-minute drill, where just whatever comes to mind, write it. No wrong answers, no wrong story scenarios, and then let everybody share it. And everybody laughs, everybody cries. There's a lot of emotion, group emotion that's shared in the process. And they become a little more comfortable with being self-revealing, and then let the art come out in the midst of that. So it's actually kind of fun. It's cathartic.
And John Lasseter says the workshops can be more than just a personal arts creative experience. He says what's learned in these workshops can bleed over into how a person sees other art.
I would say the goal of any art workshop is just to help people find their way in the arts. So what happens is they learn, maybe in the photography, I'm not going to speak for you, but in the photography, they might learn to start looking at composition, thinking about that. Building a desire to finish it yourself and kind of see the final results instead of putting it in the hands of a photo processing place. With script writing, same thing, just to have that experience of creating yourself. And then with art, it's the same way, just begin look at colors and values and shapes and think about that. All of a sudden, when you're driving down the street, you're looking at trees and seeing them in a different way than you used to, from a little more of a creative mind, where you're evaluating and learning. And when I first started doing that, when the bug caught, I realize I can take this into any venue. I mean, music's waiting for this kind of person that has their eyes open to the way the world really works and the things that actually connect the different art forms and that kind of thing. So it almost feels like you've raised as a human somewhat when you begin learning creative things like this, any kind of art form. So.
And Kyle Agee, who will be leading the photography workshop with Neil Holland, offers one more reason to consider a chance to experience an arts workshop: pride in the work.
Every image that I see that Neil and I have shot, I can remember where we shot it, when we shot it, the struggle of having to shoot it, you know, it being 110 degrees in a tent, or, you know, having to run a half a mile in Prairie Grove to get back to the tent to develop it. Every single struggle that's associated with that image makes me love the image more.
The first workshops begin in mid-June. Other workshops extend into August. If you'd like more information, you can go to jbu.edu/art. And from there, you can find links to the John Brown University Visual Art Summer Workshop Series 2014. This is Ozarks at Large.
50 years ago, two scientists discovered something that changed the way we understand the universe. They found the afterglow of the Big Bang.
It told us a tremendous amount about the universe, including its age, but also a census of what it's made of, and many other aspects that we just didn't know before.
How the Big Bang was found, today on All Things Considered from NPR News.
All Things Considered begins at 3 o'clock today on 91.3 FM.
This is KUAF 91.3 FM, Fayetteville, Fort Smith, Bentonville, Pocola, Oklahoma.
I like it.
Just fun to say.
It is fun to say.
You'll be heading west later today.
Southwest?
Well, it will be west of here.
Sure.
Van Buren, right? Fort Smith?
Fort Smith. I'm headed to Fort Smith, yeah. Work on a story there, so.
With
YAG in Fort Smith, the Young Actors Guild.
Yeah.
Mm-hmm. Their summer musical this year, Cinderella. So one of my favorites, so I'm excited to go talk to them at one of the rehearsals this evening.
And welcome back.
Thank you.
We missed you while you were gone.
But oh, yes.
Glad you had fun in Chicago.
I did have fun in Chicago. It was a nice little vacation before things get too hectic in the summertime or too hot. Definitely was not too hot in Chicago.
Well, if it makes you feel any better, it was not too hot here while you were
there. Yes, yes. I do know that there was a cold weather front or whatever moved through a good chunk of the country, at least where I would have been. So either way.
We gave away the tickets to Rocklahoma earlier on this edition of Ozarks at Large. We still have some tickets for summer activities yet to be given away.
We do. You can still register for the Wakarusa ticket giveaway on our website, KUAF.com. If you go to our homepage on the right side of the page, the upper right side, there's a little link for you to click and you fill it out pretty quickly and you'll be entered to win there, and that drawing will take place during the noon edition of Ozarks at Large next Friday.
Next Friday, a week mm-hmm. from this Friday. And there are only two tickets left in existence for the Mozart at the Museum Artisphere Orchestra concert, which is a week from tomorrow.
It's basically sold out.
It is sold out.
But we have two tickets.
But we...
Oh, I've missed so much while I've been gone.
We, KUAF, in possession of the final two tickets to see the Artisphere Orchestra inside the Great Hall at Crystal Bridges Museum of American Art.
Are we going to share those tickets?
We are.
Okay.
We are, yes. We're just going to keep them.
Wasn't sure if you were just bragging or what was happening right there.
So if you'd like to get these last two tickets, you go to Facebook and go to the Of Note with Katie Hendrickson Facebook page.
Okay.
And then there is a picture of the Artisphere Orchestra. You just share that, and you're automatically entered.
Okay.
And I think she gives them away, I think it's the 27th.
Okay.
So that's the day before the concert.
All right.
Now, the good news is, if you don't have tickets yet and you don't win those last two, you can still hear the concert.
Right, because we'll be broadcasting it live.
Live, right here on KUAF.
Much like we did last year.
That's right. Well, perhaps exactly like we did last year. That will be Wednesday night, May 28th, a week from tomorrow night at 8 o'clock on KUAF.
Okay. So lots to do.
That's right. Ozarks at Large is a production of KUAF. I'm Kyle Kellums.
And I'm Antoinette Grajeda.
You will be back tomorrow with Christina Thomas and a brand new edition of Ozarks at Large. And thanks so much for listening.